And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
A perfectly good brain wasted.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Roger Martin is a recovering strategy consultant turned business school dean. His passion these days, other than tennis and wine, is exploring mysteries related to the way we think about or model our world. Most recently, he's examined the way in which theories that are meant to help corporations achieve financial goals and make shareholders rich actually produce the opposite. His latest book has the intriguing title, Fixing the Game, Bubbles, Crashes, and What Capitalism Can Learn from the NFL. Welcome to the show, Roger. How are you today?
It's great to be on. I'm terrific.
Thanks. Well, thank you for being our guest. I love to talk to thought leaders such as yourself. So let's dive right into it, and let me give just a real quick recap of the first decade of the 21st century. Starting back in 1999, we had the Y2K bug, which led to the boom in tech spending. Then we had the dot-com bubble, which burst after 9/11. Dow was up to 14,000 at its high point, down to a low of 6,500. We had the housing bubble. And that doesn't even include such bubble companies and issues such as Enron, Global Crossing, WorldCom, and even Bernie Madoff. The point is that booms and busts are not new. They're not a recent phenomenon. And comparing the early 21st century to the early 20th century, what differences are there between the booms and the busts of the early 20th century and the 21st century?
Well, they're happening faster. It would be the big difference, Bill, is we went essentially from the latest really bad bust of the 20th century was 1929, all the way to 2000, 2001, and we had one. And then we put in place a bunch of what we thought would be fixes, clamping down on things and independence and the like. And sure enough, a mere 7 years later, we had a crash of even worse proportions than 2000, 2001. So what worries me is these are getting closer together from 70 years down to 7 years, and I think there's a reason why that's happening.
Well, what is that reason, Roger?
Well, we are in an era now where we have executives compensated with stock, and this stock-based compensation, I think, is driving executives to try and create volatility in the expectations around their company to exploit their stock-based compensation, and that is creating volatility in the market that people like hedge funds exploit to exacerbate them, and we're getting wilder swings essentially by design.
All right. Well, interesting. In your book, I like the analogy that you draw. It's the difference between shareholder compensation and company performance is the same as the difference between winning a bet on the Super Bowl and actually winning the Super Bowl. Elaborate on that, if you will, please.
Sure. I mean, there's an interesting parallelism. So in football, there's a real game that's played every Sunday. Lots of teams go out in the field and play a real game for 60 real minutes, real throws, real passes, real touchdowns, a real score, a real winner, and a real loser. And associated with that is an expectations game. That is, between Monday and Saturday, bettors look at what they think is going to happen, what they expect is going to happen, and on the basis of that, place a bet. And the bookies in Las Vegas establish a point spread that evens the money on either side. And the interesting thing about the NFL, right, is it says to everybody involved in the real game of playing real football, don't you dare play in the expectations game, betting on football. And why? Why are they so worried about that? Well, they're worried that if players are trying to make money in football betting, they'll do things to hurt the game that may actually destroy the game in order to make money betting on football, point shaving and tanking and the like.
Right. Just ask Pete Rose in American baseball. I mean, there's the analogy right there.
Absolutely. Or the Chicago Black Sox,
Predates me there, Roger. Sorry. 1919 was a little before my time.
In football, Alex Karras and Paul Harding were kicked out of football for a year betting on football. In business, it's the same structure. Real companies build real factories and produce real products and sell them to real people for real money and a real on that. And there's also an expectations game where investors imagine what's going to happen in the future and on that basis place a bet on the stock price. And the stock price is the moral equivalent to a point spread. It adjusts continuously to put even money on either side. As many people think the stock is going to go up as go down, and that's why it's what it is. Interestingly, a in the real game, CEO, senior executives, boards, you must stay away from the expectations game of betting on football or on business. We say you must, yet we expect that they won't have that influence of betting on that expectations game influence what they do in the real game.
All right. And
in my book, I chronicle how I think the evidence is completely in the opposite direction. They are influenced about how the real game by their desire to win, essentially, in the expectations game.
All right. My guest is Roger Martin, author of the book Fixing the Game, Bubbles Crashes, and What Capitalism Can Learn from the NFL. And, Roger, I'm going to challenge you on this a little bit. The modern thinking, the prevailing thinking is that you want executives to have skin in the game. You want them to be concerned not only as people who draw a salary, but also people who are interested in the long-term share price of the company and making the share price go up for other shareholders. What do you say to that?
Well, if indeed they were interested in the long, long-term share price going up, that would be good. But almost all companies... stock-based compensation systems don't. They reward them for short-term movements in share prices. And what executives figured out as stock-based compensation became prevalent is the way to make your stock-based compensation pay is to do something that gooses up expectations in the short term and then cash in your stock or retire and have your stock vest and then cash it in. And in fact, we've seen, not surprisingly, a shrinkage in the tenure of CEOs. Why? It's because they've learned over time that that's how you maximize your stock-based compensation. And I would argue they've learned something even more serious, right? Which is the best thing to do is when you come on board a company is to declare, oh dear, things are worse than we thought. We have to do restructuring, drive the stock price down, so that when you get your stock-based compensation at the lower price, you can ride it back up and make a ton of money.
All right. My guest is Roger Martin. And, Roger, you've made the case very clear as what the problem is. So the next question is, what's the solution? You've got a five action steps that you can take. So what's the solution?
Well, the solution really is compensating executives for playing in the real game. You know, I'm all for incentive compensation if it is based on the real game. So real measures like return on net assets or market share or the like, that focuses them properly on the real game. And it also focuses on making customers happy. You know, right now we have a CEO spending too much of their time trying to make people in the stock market happy, analysts happy, shareholders happy. And it is taking them away from what really creates value. That's why returns are lower with stock-based compensation than they were before we had stock-based compensation.
Now, do you have empirical data, Roger, that supports that comment? Because that's a big comment that compensation is returns are lower with the stock-based companies. Tell me more about that.
Yep. Well, if you take 1976 was when the seminal article was written that established the notion that we should align interests of shareholders and managers with stock-based compensation. Before then, there was almost none, less than 1% of CEO compensation in America in public companies was stock-based. That quickly after 1976 rose to 50% compensation. And if you just ask the question, what were total shareholder returns on the S&P 500, so the broadest index in America, mm-hmm. total shareholder returns adjusted for inflation in the period after 1976, between then and now, versus an equal period before, the returns are 15% lower. So returns have gone down. It's not as though shareholders are doing better because they're having to deal with less volatility, right, less risk. Volatility, broad measures of volatility have gone up 15%. So shareholders are doing worse with taking on more risk, and the people who are doing great are CEOs.
Well, now let's explore that a little bit deeper if we can, Roger, because if I'm a shareholder in a company, I was going to choose General Motors, but that would be a bad example because of bankruptcy. So let me choose General Electric. All right, and if I bought in General Electric in the 1960s, my cost basis on that stock would be about $6. Now, granted, it has gone up and down and currently is only about $16. But even over time, if I'm a long-term investor, I've made up better by holding GE stock and taking the dividends than if there hadn't been Jeff Immelt and before him Jack Welch with stock-based compensation.
Yeah, and in fact, you can point to companies that have had excellent shareholder returns kind of over time with stock-based compensation. It's not as though they've gone to zero. It's just they are across the board 15% lower. And it simply begs the question. You could say, well, it's 15% lower for other reasons, but I ask the question, what is the demonstration that stock-based compensation has helped? Lower returns across the board, higher volatility, two major blowout crashes, shortened CEO tenures. You know, kind of what about this picture causes us to say, boy, I'm glad we made that switch. There just isn't anything there, and there are these few troubling things that say, you know what, there's more evidence that it's gotten worse than there is evidence that it's gotten better.
Well, those are provocative statements. My guest is Roger Martin. His book is Fixing the Game, Bubbles, Crashes, and What Capitalism Can Learn from the NFL. Let me ask you this question, Roger, because where are the board of directors in all of this? They're the ones who are supposed to be governing how the company is run, and they're the ones who are riding herd on the executives who you say are running away and driving up the share prices.
Well, you know, I guess I think the directors have, like everybody else, swallowed the Kool-Aid of this shareholder value maximization, stock-based compensation theory. And so what they think they're doing is the right thing. They think that giving stock-based compensation and focusing managers on shareholder value maximization is actually good for the shareholders. And so in some sense, doing the job enthusiastically, they're just doing the wrong job. They're not bad people. They've got a bad theory. And that's why I wrote the book. Is to try and encourage boards, CEOs, and also all these services like ISS, right, Institute for Shareholder Services. They rank and put pressure on boards to make sure they have lots of stock-based compensation for the executives and the like. And so I'm writing the book to try and get people to reflect a little bit on the theory and ask themselves the question, is what I'm doing actually useful? And I'm afraid that many of these boards are doing things they think are useful in a good-hearted way, but they're actually not helping the problem.
And that is something that we need to be concerned about. In your book, Roger, Fixing the Game, one of the things that you focus in on is regulating players' expectations, and most notably, you call out hedge funds and say the hedge funds basically create no value for society. Comment on that, if you will, please, and I might take exception to that.
Sure, sure. Well, I'm happy to have exception taken. And a good dialogue. For a hedge fund to make a dollar, right, mm-hmm. They're just a trader. For a hedge fund to make a dollar, somebody's got to lose a dollar. So mm-hmm. It's a zero-sum game. And rather than somebody building a company, you know, you may say, oh, gee, Bill Gates is too rich for, you know, his own good. He, you know, takes too much money from people. Well, he's rich, but he's rich because he builds software that people want to pay more for than it costs to build. He's creating net benefit for society.
I would agree.
A hedge fund simply trades value back and forth between players. And I think also the problem is with the hedge funds with the 2 and 20, you know, 2% of assets under management and 20% of the upside they create, I think they've got a huge incentive to create volatility, to seek volatility and even create volatility because they need stocks to move, so stock instruments to move in order for them to make gains on the 20% carried interest they have. So we've got CEOs who've got an interest in volatility combined with hedge funds who've got an interest in volatility, and I think it's an unholy, you know, alliance, and that's what's producing all of the volatility that we currently have.
Well, before we start calling it the devil's spawn, Roger, let me just put this out for hedge funds if we can, because hedge funds, yes, I will agree that they create volatility. They have to. That's how they make their money. But hedge fund managers always have skin in the game. Their own money is at risk. And so they're not going to do things that are excessively risky And if they do something that's excessively risky and stupid, they lose money. So they tend to be more prudent, particularly if you compare them to mortgage bankers and bankers in general who do not have skin in the game, who make silly bets, as we did in the mortgage bust, when knowing that the government, the U.S. government, was going to back them. So I would say, in defense of the hedge funds, the fact that they've got money in the game, it's their money that's in the game, they tend to be a little bit more prudent. Yes, they create some volatility. There's no doubt about that. But the volatility is reasonable volatility because they don't want it to get too excessive. Your thoughts?
I think that's a nice theory, but I think with most of the now big hedge funds, the true amount of skin in the game is not terribly relevant to them. So when somebody already has $6 billion personal net worth in the bank, and they put $50 million of their own money into their latest hedge fund, it just doesn't matter all that much. They still have this desire to say, I'm going to swing for the fences and see whether I can make oodles of money so that I go from $6 billion to $12 billion, so I get to be higher up on the Forbes 400 list. And I think the skin in the game argument is exaggerated in my view, and I would not take much comfort myself in it. I think if the vast majority of their net worth, right, if it was like Lloyd's of London,
mm-hmm.
right, Lloyd's of London is different. It's like my entire net worth is pledged against this syndicate,
right.
Then I would say, okay, you have the kind of skin in the game that is going to really influence your way of acting. But I just don't think in most hedge funds it really is that major. The hedge funds are terrific, though, marketers. I mean, they market that. They market, hey, our interests are aligned. I mean, Bill, did you notice that in 2002-03 there was this huge backlash against options, right, as compensation for management? Because the theory was, hey, what we figured out is that if you've got a CEO with a base salary, a healthy multi-million-dollar base salary and stock options, they have an incentive to swing for the fences. And so we said, stock options bad, we're going to do a restricted stock. So let's think about hedge funds. 2% assets under management and 20% of the upside. What is that exactly the same as?
Well, I see
management with base salary and stock options, and why do we think that's going to get us anything different?
Well, it's thought-provoking and something that we do need to examine. My guest is Roger Martin. His book, Fixing the Game, Bubbles, Crashes, What Capitalism Can Learn from the NFL. And tell me, Roger, if people are intrigued by what you say, they want to learn more about you, learn more about the book, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
I would direct them to go to my website, which is www.rogerlmartin, Lloyd is my middle initial, rogerlmartin.com, and what they'll see on the homepage is Fixing the Game and a whole bunch of interviews, excerpts, audio and video on the book. That's the best source of all the stuff about Fixing the Game.
That is great. Roger, thank you so much for being my special guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.
Well, thanks a lot for having me, Bill.
Take care.